No, I'm not for sale.
What's happening, fam? Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys all for joining me here right before week 14 matchup with the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. The Indianapolis Colts are traveling there. Probably going to be a snowy game. It says that there's supposed to be up to 6 to 10 inches of snow for this one. So could be quite interesting to watch this one kind of develop here. And there's some, you know, some interesting things that we could possibly see, some things that we could not see. I guess some interesting things we could see on either end of the accord, for that matter. We don't know if Tyrod Taylor is going to play. Nathan Peterman could end up being the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills in this one. This one looks like if Peterman does, then it's quite possible that the Colts might find a way or might have the inkling to find a way to try to pull this one out. So there are some things that kind of are leaning towards the Indianapolis Colts favor here. There are also some things that are leaning against them as well. So I'm going to run through real quick the final injury report that you guys probably already know by now, but I'll give you guys some thoughts and stuff on that real quick. Moncrief, Melvin, and Darryl Daniels all out. Also, there was an update late in the process with Ryan Kelly. He's also out. His concussion symptoms, I'm guessing, had come back after they already released the injury report. So I mean, I can only assume that maybe those came back and he had some sort of a spell or something, and then they decided against letting him play. I really don't see the point in risking anything at all. If they even thought for an inkling of a second that he was going to be, you know, not perfect, not 100% as far as the concussion issues, they have no business playing him right now. Mike Person, he's also a guy who's interesting in this because he had a really good game last week for the Colts, and he is supposed to be filling in if he plays. He's questionable right now. He had a limited practice on Friday, but that will be interesting to see if he can kind of relive what he did last week against the Jaguars. Chris Milton is questionable. He did not practice, though, Friday, so that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Denzel Good, he was limited with an illness, and he's also questionable. Hassan Ridgeway, full practice. Jonathan Hankins, full practice. And Frank Gore, his was a rest designation, obviously, but he was full practice as well. Really excited to see Ridgeway and Hankins back, for sure. I'm hoping that Denzel Good is in there because for a Colts offensive line that's already struggling a little bit, you know, nobody's trying to say that Denzel Good's some all-pro right tackle, but they definitely need all that they've got. You know, the Colts don't have a lot right now. So anybody that they can keep healthy and that they can get in the lineup there, definitely a good thing for the Colts. And that'll be something that we need to keep our eyes on, especially, you know, how does Mike Person play? Does that ankle hold up? What's really up with Chris Milton's neck? You know, Hankins, chest, I don't know. You know, they said chest injury, but they kind of led on a little bit that might have been some sort of an illness as well. This is the kind of the time of the year when people start getting, you know, sick and you start seeing these illness situations pop up. So kind of interesting to watch some of these guys. Hopefully the Colts can really put a battle together for this. Later on in the show, going to have the full show that I was on with Locked On Bills with Kevin Massari, and enjoyed having a good conversation with him. We had a good talk. It was kind of fun to talk and kind of go back and forth about what we saw from each other's teams and stuff like that. So that'll be the bulk of the show today. Just wanted to give you guys a quick 10-minute or so run through of a couple things that I see that could lead this game into interesting territory for sure. So I'm going to give you guys three things to keep your eyes on this week. First and foremost, can the Colts run defense stop McCoy? That and just in general, can the Colts run defense, you know, live up to what we think that they've actually kind of morphed into this year? It'll be, I mean, look, if Peterman's the quarterback, they're going to get a heavy dose of that running game. That's going to be a test for the Colts because the Colts, you know, McCoy is shifty. although if it's on snow, that might mitigate a little bit of it. And to be quite honest with you, last time the Colts played McCoy, well, that may not be true either. The last time they played him when he played in Philadelphia, they shut him down for a large, large portion of the game. Totally different team, totally different situation, coaches in large part and all of that. So that's not necessarily something that should play into this, but it is worth noting that, you know, at least, and I might give too much credit here, but at least Pagano understands that there are certain packages and stuff that can limit McCoy if you can get him and before he gets to the second level and really gives you some damage. Another thing, if Tyrod Taylor's playing, that running defense is going to be crucial in holding Tyrod in the pocket. The there just is no aspect of this game where you can allow Tyrod Taylor out of the pocket where he does kind of flourish and expect to pull this game out. They've got, you know, some interesting – they've had an interesting season. Earlier in the year, they were beating teams that they probably shouldn't have beat with the wholesale – they gutted the roster, it seemed like. Traded people here, traded people there. They brought in some guys as well, though, recently. So it's going to be a fun one to watch with that. This is an interesting game, I think. This Bills team has a lot of confidence, but that's probably something that the Colts lack a little bit right now. You know, we hear how much, that they're headstrong and that these guys are resilient and stuff. Well, they've had to be to go through a 3-9 season so far and not had to have, you know, ultimately kind of thrown in the towel a little bit. So keep your eye on the running game and LeSean McCoy in particular. Number two, I think that the Colts really have to see what they can get out of Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett's got to be better. We've gone through this several times. Jacoby Brissett is a better quarterback than Scott Tolzien. But right now, think about it this way. How many wins has Jacoby Brissett actually, you know, been the driving force behind? The Colts have only got three. So, is he responsible for those three wins? Or is he responsible for one or two? And how many would Tolzien have been responsible for? I don't really think in the regard with as far as leading towards wins that you can really say that Brissett has had more of an impact than Tolzien would have. Maybe a little bit because of the deep ball. He's been able to get that deep. But look, that's really been kind of his saving grace, hasn't it? A lot of the stuff underneath, a lot of the timing throws and stuff have been pretty bad. It's been kind of difficult to watch a little bit at times. And you really have to kind of ask yourself legitimately and objectively, what has Jacoby Brissett done to lead the Colts to wins? Not much. Not much. And even if he has in a couple of the games, it hasn't been more than a couple, has it? Because the Colts have won three games, and he's fallen apart in the second half in large portions. I mean, so, and don't get me wrong, I'm by no means trying to get behind Scott Tolzien in any way, shape, or form. I'm just trying to put it in perspective to let you guys see that right now this is just kind of an average quarterback in the NFL, not starting caliber at this time. Probably could be eventually in his future, and I think a couple years down the road, maybe he is. Maybe he is worthy of that distinction. He's not right now, though. That's just not reasonable. That's not the way it goes, especially when you see the mistakes he continues to make and things like that. Now, he's going to have a rough defense to go up against. They are a little limited as well, but they've still got Kyle Williams, and he's possibly going to play this week. They've got a run defense that's pretty stout, and he's going to have to make some plays from the pocket, and he's going to have to make them on time, and he's going to have to be accurate. And he's going to have trust in his receivers to just let the ball go. I'd rather see Jacoby Brissett throw three touchdowns and three interceptions than throw 0 and 0. I really would. Because that tells you that he's at least pushing the ball down the field. And the three touchdowns means the Colts are scoring points, right? No touchdowns from Jacoby Brissett. That doesn't mean the Colts aren't scoring touchdowns, but they're not scoring, you know, whatever he can put on the board through the air. So he's got to be better in the red zone, got to be better at accuracy, short to intermediate routes. And, you know, those explosive plays aren't going to come every game. And you can't live and die by that. That's, I mean, almost like living and dying by a half court shot in basketball. That just doesn't happen very often. And it's not happened very often for him. So number two is definitely Jacoby Brissett has got to come to play. Number three, can the Colts simulate some part of a pass rush? The Colts have really struggled to get multiple sacks in a game, and they really need to prove that they can do that. The Colts right now have 20 sacks on the year. That's less than two a game, and there's really not much that you can presume that the Colts can do. Right now, the Colts have an interesting situation. Simon's on IR. Terrell Basham's going to get more play. Barkevious Mingo's probably going to be in a few more of the passing situations. Jabal Sheard's going to have to step up as well. He's been great through this season, I mean, or really good at least. He leads the team in sacks with 4.5, and he's going to have to be a guy who can throw a couple more. I mean, 4.5 sacks leads the team. We need a 10-sack guy. That's not happening this year. I understand that, and that's okay, and I'm not trying to necessarily say that the Colts should have a 10-sack guy out of this bunch. But with a better defense in general, I think one of these guys could – I think Jabal Sheard could be a 10-sack guy right now with this defense being a little bit better in the pass rush, a little better in long passing situations and such. But right now, the Colts haven't had many games where they've had multiple sacks, and the Colts need probably legitimately 4 to 5 sacks in a game to – allow their offense a little bit of leeway to try to put something on the board here. So pass rush is vital for the Colts this week for number three. I think they absolutely have to get a 4 or 5 sack game. And I'm going to go ahead and make some sort of a prediction here. And I'm going to say that the Colts do get 5 sacks this week. I think that it's possible that Peterman does play. And I think that their offensive line, though pretty good in the running game, I think they lack a little bit in the pass protection. And I think that this Colts team really has to come into this game with a new set of vigor. I mean, they really have to come into this game and think, look, we're 3-9, man. We've got to make some waves before the end of the season. We've only got a few more games. And if we don't, you know, this season's going to be a severe disappointment. It's already a disappointment, but you understand how guys in that situation feel. They want to come in and they want to actually put something on the board to have a game. And I think that I really truly believe that Ted Moncino is going to dial up as much as he can against this team, because I think that he feels that he could be not necessarily fighting for his job with the Colts next year, but he could very possibly feel that he's fighting for a job next year as either position coach or a coordinator elsewhere. So I would expect to see a lot of blitzing. I would expect to see Moncino kind of throw the book at the Buffalo Bills right now, because I think this is a team that matches up well with the Colts, and the Colts match up well with them. It's going to be interesting to see. So those are three things that I think you guys need to keep your eyes on for this game. We're going to take a quick break. When you come back, you're going to have me and Kevin on here from the Locked On Bills podcast and the run-through from that. And then we'll see you guys back here following the game Sunday night. I'll record Monday. It'll be live. And thank you guys for all that you're doing for the show. Please continue to support the show with the ratings and reviews. Follow me on Twitter at @MDanley_NFL. We really are trying to get some new things into this. We may try to incorporate a couple of them before the season ends, just to see how it goes and work towards something like this next year. But we've got live show thoughts, something we're going to possibly do this year before the end of the season at one of the games, do a live show in-game, and that way you guys can kind of get our thoughts and stuff during the game. You kind of join, you know, sit on your couch and have the podcast with us while we talk back and forth about what we're seeing live in the game. So if you guys would like that, and that sounds like something you guys would be interested in, hit me up or whatever, you know, and just kind of say it. But I think we're looking forward to at least trying some new things such as that. So be on the lookout for all that, and we'll talk to you guys soon on Monday. Hopefully the Colts can pull out a W here and get to 4 wins. But Kevin and I are next.
Welcome back to another edition of Locked On Bills. As always, I'm your host, Kevin Misery, here with a special crossover Colts edition with Matt Danley from Stampede Blue. Matt, how are you doing today?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be here, brother.
Absolutely. It's great to always, you know, these crossover shows really crush it for our fan base. We're really interested to see what you have to say about the Colts. And, you know, we'll start off right at the top. Give us a little brief season overview on the Colts and, you know, kind of what's going on over there. Another small market. You know, really tell us the whole rundown there as to what's gotten you to the three-quarter mark.
Does anybody really want to hear that?
I think you'd be shocked what in Buffalo people care about. I mean, they love their football.
Oh man, I tell you, you know, it's been so difficult. I mean, basically, you take the whole, you know, what happened with Andrew Luck, and you know, kind of just magnify that with injuries, poor quarterbacking at times, poor coaching, and I mean, it really has been. You get the excitement from the offseason. You're just so convinced that Andrew Luck's going to come back at some point and kind of put this team on his shoulders, even though they lack a little bit of it. You figure. Possibly an 8-9 win team. I think that was most of my predictions, at least preseason. I think there was a lot of people kind of in that range, anywhere from 7-9. Even some, you know, going over the edge were around 10 wins, but that was with the assumption that Luck would be back within the first few weeks of the season. You know, obviously that didn't happen, and he's, you know, we got to wait now for 2018, but getting Jacoby Brissett, there's some of that. You know, that reinvigoration of excitement again, thinking that you've got a capable quarterback coming in that is going to take a little time, but, you know, he may surprise us. He's played pretty well. And, you know, I'm a little critical of him, but I'm a critical of everybody on the Colts anyways. So, I mean, I've had some time to, you know, see him grow in some areas. And I've kind of been doing some film room stuff on that with Stampede Blue to kind of show our readers, you know, what this guy's doing, where is the I'm new to the Colts scheme, so this is where I'm struggling right now, versus this is a young quarterback still not understanding, you know, to throw at the top of his at the top of his drop, you know, to, you know, timing patterns and stuff like that. Just anything and everything, watching his vision, his ability to hold the ball up when he, you know, begins to kind of try to evade some of that pressure, that's an issue with him. So a lot of things with Brissett, you know, we get excited about Sheard, you know, some of the rookies coming in, they're all hurt, it seems like, not Sheard specifically, but, you know, anything, any ultimate ray of sunshine that we thought we might have this year has been, you know, completely cluttered by clouds. And I think that, you know, not just, I don't think anybody feels sorry for Colts fans in that regard, but I mean, you know, every fan base, literally with the exception of just maybe a couple, understand that and have understood that, you know, for various times throughout, you know, their fandom of their team, for sure. Everybody's gone through crappy team or crappy, you know, groups of years and stuff. So everybody gets that. It's just been a disappointing year overall. I mean,
for
it's
sure.
Hard. It's just really hard to, you know, get fans interested in, because right now, I mean, if you know this, anytime your season's lost in the second half of the year, ultimately what you're doing is you're just evaluating for the next season. It's almost like an early draft season for the team that's already there. You know, you're trying to find out who is capable of staying on this team, who's a legit 53-man roster guy for the following year. You know, what are the pieces that could be, you know, adjoining something that comes in the off season, whether it be from the draft or free agency. And then of course, you know, you've got, you know, some of that foundation with Andrew Luck, you know, what they need to do ahead of him. And it's just, like I said, this second part of the season here is basically all evaluation, I think. And we're trying, you know, at least through the podcast and through the site, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of keeping Colts fans interested in what's relevant right now. Because I think ultimately when you come into a season with all these caveats, you look at, you know, what did you really expect? This is a rebuilding year. And people understood that until they saw the possibility for a little success. Then that whole notion of a rebuild goes out the window and people start getting excited about what they, you know, think that they could see this year. And then the disappointment comes when it doesn't really come, you know, turn out. And that's kind of what we've done. We've set ourselves on our own little roller coaster of emotions when it probably wasn't even warranted. And if we would have just kept our same mindset from the beginning of, you know, training camp to it being a rebuild year and not to really expect anything past or even probably up to a 500 season, then we would probably kind of be in a good place right now. But of course, you know, we as fans get ourselves built up. Others build up our thoughts on what we see with some of the players on the roster. And then, you know, ultimately we get let down. But that's basically been the epitome of the Colts season so far. They're struggling, you know, not just with their record, but they're struggling with late game stuff, early game stuff. Now, it used to be with Pagano, the issue was that basically in the first half, you could basically count on less than a touchdown, it seemed like. And the Colts were really a second half team. This year has been much the opposite, of course. They've had, I think, 8 leads going into halftime, and I think 7 of those they've lasted through the third quarter, and the Colts are 3-9. You know, that's just the way it's been.
I mean, it's
been a smash in the face, it seems like, about every couple weeks.
Yeah, we as Bills fans understand, you know, that bad team mentality, looking forward to the draft. When you play in the division with the New England Patriots, they not only take away the division from ever being achieved, they give you 2 losses generally every year. Sometimes you steal 1 from them, and they, you know, set you off 0-2 with 2 AFC losses, 2 division losses, you know, kind of put you really behind the 8 ball, and, you know, definitely alludes to the limited amount of playoff spots that come out of the AFC East beside the Patriots. The Dolphins broke that last year, but the Jets and the Bills have droughts going on themselves for the playoffs. Bills are going to potentially reach 18 seasons without the playoffs here. Getting into Andrew Luck a little bit and your coaching staff, you know, what happened there? He was on PUP, got pulled, looked like he was going to play. Is Pagano going to stick around, first of all? It doesn't seem like it. And second of all,
No chance.
So he's no this chance. Is it. The last yeah. 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
Yes,
that's good to hear. We're excited for you guys that's probably the right move. You would know more than us on that. Andrew Luck, is he going to be good to go? Is he going to play football again? Is he going to be a Colt? Give us a yeah. little quick. You know, what do you think? What's going to happen with him long term now that the season's over?
A lot of that stuff, as far as you know, and I get it because. We don't all follow every single team that closely to kind of try to find the ins and outs, the right insiders or just whatever for each team, you know, and it's hard to see. But I think largely, and I wouldn't even say largely, I'd say almost predominantly all that stuff is just all hyperbolic statements that people are just throwing out. It's basically the can this guy be the MVP of the league conversation with somebody that's, you know, a rising star. You know, I mean, that's where I'm getting at as far as that's ultimately what this conversation is. He's hurt. He's been hurt. And they brought him back for a little while into practice, and they took him back out. Now the question is he ever going to play football again? And that's the way it had been when the initial situation happened. But, look, they showed Luck throwing basically soft toss 40-yard balls, and he looked great. He just had, you know, some stuff go wrong. I think either the surgery was a little less successful than they originally thought, or ultimately it just, you know, there was something that was leading to more soreness than they expected. And it just, I think shoulders are a really weird situation. I've had Dr. Gene Bramall on my show, and he's broken it down a little bit to kind of differentiate between the rotator cuff and the labrum and all the other different parts of that shoulder, and he really did a good job for it. And it's been, you know, months now to where even as much as I was into that conversation, it was really good. I forget a lot of it, but I just think it's just the way that the situation went. Yep. I think that everybody wants a really big explanation for the way it happened, and you know, it's just like S happens, man. I mean, it just doesn't go right all the time. And when you're bringing stuff back, typically you believe a pro athlete like Andrew Luck or some of these elite guys, they're just gonna heal super quick. And sometimes they do, and it's amazing. And other times they don't, and there's no real rhyme or reason for it, man. I mean, tendons don't know he's an NFL quarterback necessarily, you know, and all the little pieces in his shoulder don't know that. So as long as he's continuing to do that, I don't see that there's any reason that he wouldn't be able to come back. I mean, it just seems very far-fetched to assume that he wouldn't. But I'll tell you, if any of this stuff, if he's not throwing bombs in training camp, I'm going to be a little worried because, that's a long recovery time. That's a long rehab situation. He should be coming back, just lighting the field up.
Does he start on day one for you guys?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
He better. And that's what I'm saying. If he comes into training camp and he's anything less than just on the field every single snap and just, you know, doing everything he can to be
then
in the plays. I think day one even. I mean that honestly. He'll have so much time to have rehabbed and everything else. He can do all of his own personal workouts with any receivers he wants in the offseason, so long as the coaching staff, you know, and all of them have nothing to do with it. I mean, there's no reason for him not to complete his rehab, complete his, you know, all that that comes with it, and to be out throwing as soon as he's completely able to be his doctor. So if he doesn't come into
training.
Does
the next coaching staff move from him? No way. They stay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the coaching staff is going to be gone. But Ballard understands that you don't just grow Andrew Lux on trees. I mean, and Buffalo knows this too. I mean, you guys have a young guy in Peterman who a lot of people liked coming out of the draft. Obviously not as like a top tier necessarily, but a guy that you just assume could can learn and develop and stuff like that. I mean, obviously those guys come a dime a dozen almost, and they don't always work out. But you've got somebody in Tyrod that a lot of people have a lot of trust in. He's not a turnover-prone guy necessarily, and he kind of surprises people with his athletic ability and his ability to throw on the run and even deliver from the pocket for the most part often. And I don't think that people, you know, really give a lot of these guys the credit for, look, these guys are just, and Jacoby Brissett's a perfect example of that as well. He's an average NFL quarterback. You have Andrew Luck out there, this team honestly wins at least 4 to 5 more games. They're not a great team with all the, if you took all the other injuries and kept them the way that they are, actually injures, who's been off the field, and keep Andrew Luck on here, this team still wins a few more games without any question. And those guys just don't, you know, fall off of trees, like I said.
Yeah, they should say certainly don't. And we're, you know, learning, even with a high draft pick, you don't think that, you know, you would take a run at a top quarterback next season. I think it's more of the injury history with Luck, right? Wouldn't it? Yeah. Obviously, we know the talent that he is, what he can do, and win games on his own. I got to cover him up close. It was 2 seasons ago under Rex Ryan that we played the Colts on the home opener, and we came after him pretty much all game. And I believe that's the game he apparently got hurt in, but that was this home opener of 2015. So
I think it was the Titans that he got busted up on, because he also got a concussion that day.
Really?
Uh-huh. I think it was at home, I believe.
Gotcha. You know, getting into this matchup a little bit.
He's been hurt by a lot of teams. Don't get me. he's had a leaky offensive line, and he was prone to running himself into pressure as well. So, yeah, he got hit a lot, ton.
When you guys kind of got back, and you were 2-3, you beat the Niners and the Browns, lost to the Seahawks there. Did you have any hope for your season at that point after winning 2 of 3 games, or was it just kind of like those were a couple of bad teams? Or, you know, going into the Titans game earlier in this year, you had a stretch that could have been winnable, Titans, Jags, Bengals, Texans. Was there ever any hope, or was it pretty much that was never in the play?
I think there was definitely hope. I mean, man, you know, that Seahawks game, the Colts actually were playing pretty well in the first half. They, you know, completely blew it. And we had seen a little bit of this from the Browns game the week before, where the Colts had a really comfortable lead going into the half and basically right bar, you know, towards the end of the first half. And then they end up giving up 2 touchdowns there. And it was, you know, just ridiculous. It was pointless to be playing that sloppy, you know, when you still have a half of football to go, regardless of what team you're playing against. We knew once the Rams game was over that they were going to have the ability to beat the Cardinals. We knew the Browns were a possibility. The Seahawks were an extremely long shot. But the 49ers were a beatable team. We knew that the Titans weren't as good as a lot of people think that they are. And that put us in pretty good shape through the majority of the first half of our season. I thought, personally, and like you said, even after winning 2 of 3 there with the Browns and the Niners with the big loss to the Seahawks, I mean, especially at halftime, the Colts and Colts fans definitely thought the Colts had a possibility. This is where we thought that Jacoby Brissett was having his coming out party. And then it all went to the crapper, you know, in the second half. And then the blowout loss to the Jaguars, There's no reason the Colts should have lost to the Bengals. You know, winning against the Texans almost seemed like a given, and they still tried to lose that. And then we had an opportunity, really, to, you know, beat the Steelers and come up short there. And again, with the Titans, you know, I mean, it's just a recurring theme every week. There's opportunities. This team is an underachieving team. Even though the roster isn't what you'd want it to be, it's still underachieving from a schematic standpoint, an attention standpoint, I guess, for a lack of better words, because you know that this team has enough talent to beat some of these teams that are kind of talent deficient as well, and they're just not pulling them out.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. The Bills are kind of the opposite team as that. I mean, they've beaten some really good opponents in the Falcons, the Chiefs, beat the Raiders. So they have some decent wins under the belt, an early Jets win, who, you know, they can play okay football at times. And you know, you have these other games where they just weren't in the game at all. I mean, they got blown out by the Saints and the Chargers. Chargers was kind of a weird game where Nathan Peterman threw 5 picks in the first half, shouldn't have gotten benched by Tyrod Taylor. So you have a couple of weird instances there. You know, the Patriots game was closer than the score looked, but outside of that game, 23-3, they lost last week. No other game was really, also a Bengals game they should have won as well. So the Bengals seem to be sneaking out these wins against these teams that they seem to always do with under Andy Dalton, and a 9-3 loss in the against the Panthers earlier this year. But they're kind of opposite in the fact that they weren't even in a couple of games this year, which makes it really weird for as well as they've played at times and beaten some good opponents on the road in Kansas City and in Atlanta. And, you know, then they look, so it's kind of, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of mentality here. I mean, they're 6-6. That's right where they should be. You know, they had a favorable schedule here to finish out the year. You know, the Dolphins aren't very good themselves. They play them twice in the final 4 weeks. They needed to do anything they could to try to pull out a Patriots game, and the Patriots adjusted in the second half and, you know, back to what they were. It was a 6-3 game pretty much the entire first half. So, you know, going into Indianapolis, many, you know, if the Bills would have beaten the Patriots, they would have been pretty much to end the drought. They would have been on their way to ending the drought. But now Baltimore has a very cake schedule. The Bills probably have to win out, if not, you know, 3 out of 4 to even be there. They have an okay tiebreaker, and most of the teams are competing with Kansas City, Oakland. You know, they have the tiebreakers there over those teams that are in the hunt. So, I mean, you have an opportunity against this Colts team getting into this game again. You know, kind of get to the current. Now that we're done, kind of the long picture. You know, get me into the current status of the Colts. You know, what's the injury report? And you know, what do you see happening, you know, in Indianapolis right now? Just the team state and their injury report.
Man, I'll tell you, listen to this. All right, I'm going to give you some of the guys that the Colts have needed this year and have been, you know, I guess you would say there were a lot of expectations at one point or another, and usually right before they were injured. Henry Anderson, Pierre Desir, who was a guy who, I mean, I don't know if how come are familiar your fan bases with him, but come in, they claimed him off waivers, I believe, from Cleveland, and you bring him in after you've got Vontae Davis down injured, then the Colts end up coming off of him. Pierre Desir steps up. He's given up a couple touchdowns, some plays, but he's a really sticky corner and a guy who gets his hand in the right place at the right time. Some people are just making some really amazing catches on him. He goes out. Henry Anderson was having a resurgence of a season this year. He's out with a really weird throat injury. Like, apparently, I hadn't read the column yet, but there's a column up in the Indy Star today that I believe talks about him, that throat issue that caused him to go on IR could have been potentially life-threatening, which is really weird. But Malik Hooker, you know, the rookie safety that the Colts were depending on, even before the season, Edwin Jackson, who was basically their best combination cover and run-stopping inside linebacker. Of course, Luck, Jack Muhort at right guard, John Simon, a guy who came in and was all of the preseason pub that he was getting from Colts fans loving his addition to the team was warranted, and now he's out. Eric Swoop never played this year, who was a nice tandem receiver to Jack Doyle, you know what I'm saying? And now you've got a couple running backs, and it's just been all downhill from there. But as far as right now, if we're looking at this week. I mean, so that just kind of gives you...
I am jotting stuff down, trying to track exactly what's going on over there. doing the best that I can. Pierre Desser was a guy that I tracked out of college that I really liked. And he's a very sticky and run defense as well.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that his season's done. So, and Rashawn Melvin, I know, has been playing awesome over there. Is he looking like he'll play? I mean, I know he's pretty much your best defensive back at this point.
He didn't practice today, which is Wednesday for our listeners, but he, I think that it's possible. He's a tough dude, man. He really is. And if you guys, I don't know how many saw the play that he injured his hand on, but it looked like, ultimately there was a dislocation in there, but it looked like he broke his wrist in half because he lifts his hand off the ball and it just dangles. And it was like, oh, God, that's not going to be feeling good. But Ryan Kelly, he was limited with a concussion today. He went through practice with the red non-contact jersey on. So he's still got a couple more steps through the protocol to go before he can be good to go. I don't think Darryl Daniels is going to play. He's a tight end this week. He's had a hamstring along with every single person who's worn a horseshoe this year. I mean, it seems like everybody's had a hamstring issue. The one that gets me a little worried, and I mean just for the feasibility of making the game watchable, honestly, is a guy that probably a lot of people aren't really thinking would make this game that much more impressive for the Colts, but as Jonathan Hankins has a chest issue, not real sure what that's all about, but he did not practice today, and he is, as pertinent to the Colts having a quality run defense as anybody right now. And the Colts' run defense is in the top half of the league. I think they're right on the cusp of being in the top 10. And without some of their big plays this year, they'd be in the top 5. They've given up a lot of big run plays, 50, 60-yard runs. And without those, I tracked them, 2 weeks ago? And I think they would have been 4th at that time, and they were, 13th. So, I mean, that makes a big
difference. There's a lot of good – you guys have a lot of defensive interior players that are ranked fairly well that play a lot. I mean, Elwood, Jonathan Hankins, Henry Anderson, Marcus Hunt. Seems to rotate a lot in there. Are they playing are you swapping them in at defensive end? There's a lot of snaps between all those four.
Yeah, they're throwing them around pretty well. The good thing is Hassan Ridgeway came back and was limited today where he was out last week. Mike Person, who was the center who filled in for Ryan Kelly, actually did really well, or he was graded really well. I think he did good. I mean, I didn't notice anything wrong with him. It was kind of strange, too. You see him come in, you know he's going to be playing, and you didn't really notice him at all. And, going back, it was almost like you forgot that he played. But defensively, Marcus Hunt's been a really nice surprise this year. He was basically, if you were to talk to a Colts fan before the season started, he was a guy who might make the 53 and will probably be relegated to special teams. He's been one of the most efficient pressure rushers from, the interior that the Colts have had. And the thing that really hurt with the Henry Anderson injury is that Hunt is not – he's played defensive end out of the 5-tech the majority of his career when he was in Cincy. And he's much better from the interior. He showed really solid play this year from the interior. It was really weird. Like I said, he just wasn't expected to do that. But Henry Anderson being able to play on that outside and him being able to come into the three occasionally was allowing, those two to work off of each other. And then you've got Hankins or you've got Woods or you've got some of those other guys who have played really well too. And you've got a nice combination of pass rush and run stopping, but mostly run stopping. And just occasional pass rush. And that's obviously something that the Colts will still have to build off of going forward. But, right now, if I'm Buffalo and if I am Nathan Peterman, I'm hoping that you guys have something drawn up for the Colts linebackers to get them in space, because that is definitely the weak spot of the defense. The Colts obviously have given up a lot of big plays through the air, too. But the Colts have a lot of trouble at inside linebacker right now. They've got Jeremiah George, who's kind of my favorite in that respect, just because he's an unknown guy. He's a hard hitter, good in coverage. Bostic has been awful for 10 weeks of the year, but it seems like the last 3 or 4 weeks he's been really good.
He's a 74.9 on PFF, 35th ranked linebacker, 84 in run defense, seems to struggle everywhere else, but seems to be a good run defender.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, he was literally in the 30s like 3-4 weeks ago. I mean, he has shot up considerably.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then you have a struggling Morrison, too.
Oh, yeah. He's really in trouble. The one thing with Bostic is he does come down on, you know, he does a nice job setting receivers up when he has to carry, whether it's a running back or a tight end out into the flats or in coverage in some way, shape, or form. He struggles in lateral agility. But what he does in that, he makes up for in closing speed and power. And so if you've got an ability to put him in a situation where he can stay vertical on some of the guys, then that's okay. But he's been, like I said, I had knocked on him for so long, for at least 2 months of this season, and he really forced me to kind of eat some crow the past few weeks, because I was definitely giving him the credit that he deserved, because he was playing really well, and he has been playing really well. The Colts really desperately need to find somebody that can cover, though, from that inside linebacking opportunity. And now, you know, with Simon out, the Colts are going to have to use Terrell Basham, who's a rookie who's not done much. He's had two sacks this year, and I bet he's got 5 tackles on the season. I mean, he just hasn't done much. Jabal Sheard is definitely going to be the leader. But the Colts also brought in another defensive end, and, you know, he's not a well-known guy or anything like that. And that's, I mean, that is ultimately going to be the Colts' pass rush, I mean, outside of the interior stuff, which the Colts haven't done. It's Anthony Johnson. He's out of LSU. He's a third-year guy. You know, we don't know what he offers. We don't have any idea what he brings. But those are the only three guys they've got at outside linebacker this year now because of the injury to Simon. So that's, Barcavius Mingo, too. I guess I forgot about him. He's a guy that I've really enjoyed watching this year. But he's just not got the power. He's got so much speed, just doesn't have the power to be a real definitive pass rusher. But I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on this Peterman? I mean, you know that after his 5 interceptions that I'm sure he was torched among your fan base. And I'm sure that during the game he was torched too. But how do you guys look at him going forward?
Still a lot of hope for Nathan Peterman. I'm actually in the camp of never liking him. I covered him in camp this year. I was right out in front of him. 50% completion percentage. Guy gets the ball out of his hands quickly, so he has a good throwing motion, kind of, you know, weaker arm, accurate. Kind of reminds you of like a Tom Brady in that fact. So that's just what really got our fan base. It's just in a tizzy all season. I mean, this is a 5th-round pick that, you know, we're getting desperate over here. And you have a guy like Tyrod Taylor who's just completely opposite. Will buy his own time, you know, spin around in the pocket, make defenders look silly, miss some throws, really can't stop him in the running game if he's healthy, which, you know, he isn't right now after that facing that knee contusion. I still think he plays this week, to be honest. This is Wednesday, so we'll see what happens Thursday and Friday. I don't know why the team wouldn't have just, McDermott came out and said he's a starter when healthy. I don't know why the team wouldn't have just came out and said Peterman. I don't think there's any games that need to be played with the Colts. I really think it would have done the team justice to come out and say Peterman starting this week. He's hurt. We're hoping to get Tyrod back in the next couple weeks. But they didn't say that. So I do still think he plays. If you limit, I do think if he was sat down, it wouldn't be because he's so badly hurt. It would be because the knee injury would limit him in being able to play this upcoming game. The way he plays, you know, scrambling out of the pocket, keeping him in the pocket might, you know, it's going to really limit what he's good at. So you're going to get Peterman. He does show a lot of things you're looking for. He does go through his progressions. He gets the ball out quickly. He finds his receivers, gives him a chance. Kind of everything that Tyrod Taylor isn't. So you should have a lot of people in Buffalo that are on his side, and just kind of chalked up the first game against the Chargers to some random event. I don't even think he should be playing again. I as a 5th-round pick, I don't think you're guaranteed 3 or 4 games. I think a game and a half, 2 games. That's about it. The Bills are going to go in a different direction. They have 2 first-round picks next season, so they're going to take a quarterback definitely in the top 20 here with either theirs or the Chiefs' first-round pick, with the Chiefs losing 5 out of 6 here. That really greatly helps, you know, the Bills have two picks there in the top 20. So they're going to definitely go quarterback with one of those. Kelvin Benjamin's healthy this week, so that should be interesting to see him really for the first time ever in Buffalo beside the Chargers game where he couldn't do anything because the Bills turned it over every single throw. which is so interesting because Tyrod Taylor is in NFL history, he's the least turnover prone quarterback. So, it will frustrate you because he'll take a check down or he'll make a throw to a tight end that, you know, you really want to see him go over the seam or a dig route or other, you know, riskier throws. He's not taking those. It'll upset our fan base, you know, especially when you're sitting at 500 and you're like, well, if he makes that throw, the Bills win the game, but he'll still check it down. So it just depends on what your opinion is on that. Someone that doesn't turn the ball over, who can run for 40 to 60 yards a game, you know, look good doing it, scrambling, kind of, you know, make defensive ends look silly, you know, kind of juked Von Miller out of his shorts when they played the Broncos earlier in the season. So, you know, you're going to get that kind of play from Tyrod Taylor. Just, you know, a lot of Bills fans are fed up with it. They want a more traditional quarterback that is going to go out and throw 40 times and hopefully complete 30 of them and throw for 300 yards.
Yeah.
So that's the breakdown differences between them. They're going to definitely go in a different direction. Brandon Bean, their new general manager, is going to absolutely go his style with quarterback. You know, many have said that they're, you know, kind of following around Sam Darnold, hoping he's, you know, he's their future plan. And if there's a couple other quarterbacks that do jump him this offseason, that he's kind of in their plans for, you know, 10 to 20 range. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the quarterback breakdown in Buffalo. And, you know, the Bills kind of put two bigger names on IR this week, a Shaq Lawson, their starting defensive end, Jordan Matthews, who's never looked right all season. I'd expected a lot more out of him this season, you know, with him and Kelvin Benjamin and Zay Jones, Andre Holmes. You built a really good wide receiving core, and they really just haven't performed at all for, you know, what they were expecting. So, you know, that's kind of the breakdown in the Bills. And I noticed Dante Moncrief doesn't look like he's going to go. Is that going to affect the game at all?
It was weird, too, because, you know, this past week he got, like, what, 7 targets? And I don't think he'd had 7 targets in the past 5 games before that. So, I mean, no, I mean, he did, you know, got a couple back-to-back attempts and made some catches, got a couple first downs, had a deep attempt, a deep target come his way. It was just barely enough to, he got his foot just on the white. It would have been it would have been his best game as far as, you know, he didn't have a touchdown or anything, but it was his best game tracking the ball, coming back to the ball, running crisp routes, getting targeted on quality play calls on those for the year. So it was kind of it was like the fundamental game for him to get back in the mix, because he's just not been a factor at all in the past couple months. And that's, you know, whether that's preference on Brissett and who he likes to target, or him simply not being able to get through his progressions, I'd believe either one of them, because he does struggle in both areas. I just don't think that he would have much of an effect if he does come back. The Colts have Chester Rogers that they can trust, and they understand that he's a quality route runner. They're going to have him back. The Colts obviously need to get T.Y., you know, back in the deal. He's a number one receiver. He's just not acting like it every week. And I think that there's another combination there where it's not solely on his shoulders. There's a lot of negative approach, I guess you could say, from Brissett. Just the way that he will, if his first option isn't open right away, he is almost to the point where he is in freak out mode. He'll get to that second one, and once that second one's gone or he doesn't see it in time, he ducks the ball and he's trying to run. The problem is he's not very fast. He's got long limbs, so I mean, he does take up space when he runs, but he just is very frenetic in the pocket. He leaves good pockets. He takes 5-6 seconds to throw the ball sometimes, and I mean, audibly, I can't remember a game.
We're familiar with that.
Yeah, I just can't remember a game this year that I didn't literally scream, throw the ball, you know, I mean, as hard as I could. I mean, several times, and you know, with some adjectives added in there, you know, it really gets aggravating watching a guy. I mean, I'm sitting here on TV, and I get it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a totally different line of sight from behind the offensive lineman to watching the cam on TV. I mean, don't get me wrong.
And the Colts are generally pretty, you know, behind the eight ball at the offensive line position. Kind of how does that play into this whole thing? You know, quarterback release, is he buying himself time? You know, what's going on there on the offensive line? I know you have some struggling interior players. You know, kind of what, give us the quick
Occasionally he's buying himself time. But a lot of times he's got that 3 or 4 seconds to make that throw. He's bypassing the easy throws, dumping down, not dumping it down when he's got a guy like Marlon Mack, who's a rookie, got a lot of speed. He's shown a lot of big play ability, and he's got him in space with a linebacker. But he, you know, I mean, with a 10-yard cushion, and he won't kick it down to him. There's just stuff like that. It's
what's
so
he looking for? What I mean, because Tyrod will take that throw. What's he looking for then?
That's the beautiful question, is because we don't know. It's, I mean, literally, I'm going through film section and I'm looking at him bypassing this, and I'm like looking at what's left on the field. I'm like, what the hell is he look? What exactly is he even trying to do here? There's just no, it doesn't do him any good whatsoever to hang on to that ball. Does he think that he's going to get, you know, some extra yardage with his feet? Is he looking for lanes to run through as versus passing lanes? That's the problem. That, and it's so much a combination of everything involved. Rob Chudzinski, the offensive coordinator, has really struggled to be innovative this year. I mean, he is literally the vertical route king. I mean, the Colts are backed up inside their five, and I put this on Twitter the other day just so that people could understand that with all that I do say about Brissett and all that I do say about the receivers not being able to get off the line at times, the design of these plays is absolute trash a lot of the time. Because, I mean, they're you know, three verticals when you're inside your own 5-yard line. You don't have, he doesn't have a kick out option with one of the running backs or the tight end or anything. They've got him in max protect, man. There's nobody else to throw to. And he had to literally scramble for his life just to avoid a safety. I mean, it's just really baffling because there's so many things involved. The play calling, the timing, bad quarterbacking a good percentage of the time, bad offensive line play a good percentage of the time, drops, misfortunes, bad routes, you know. I mean, it's all-inclusive. This Colts offense right now is trash. That's the best way to describe it. Because you've got a guy like Frank Gore, who's just now jumped into fifth place in the all-time list in rushing yards, who is a stud, man. You watch him, and he, you know what? If he was on a playoff team, a legitimate contender, he's a guy who would make that team better. You watch him up to week 8, he's still Frank Gore. You watch him after week 8, he's Frank Gore.
I'm crazy they didn't trade him, right? Why didn't they take an asset for him, give him a chance to win?
I don't know who would have taken him, though. That's a legit contender, though. I mean, I tried thinking about it then, and the Eagles, you know, because they ended up getting Ajayi, was one that was rumored. But other than that, I couldn't really think of a legit contender that.
Internally in the media and remotely, what's, you know, kind of make a full circle, the Bills were actually very interested in looking for a running back, a 1B. LeSean McCoy is known to play probably 60% of the snaps, and behind him we have nothing. You have a Mike Tolbert, who's a joke to watch play the sport. Find special teamer, find fullback, find short yardage guy. Just an absolute joke to see him, you know, getting the ball at all. They got rid of Jonathan Williams, who ended up being signed to the Saints. And they, you know, pretty much didn't have anything else, you know, a trickster in Tywan Jones, who's a journeyman, and then now Travaris Cadet, who's a third down back, who I think is in the concussion protocol. So you don't have anything in Buffalo. I mean, they would have ridden Frank Gore to the bitter end. They'd run the ball every play if they could.
Yeah, Frank Gore's a good, I mean, he's got amazing vision, man. And the guy, he's not very big, 5'9", but he could squeeze into even smaller holes and punch through. And that, he's a late season guy. So if he was on a playoff team right now or a contender, he'd be helping them a lot because he gets better through the season as it goes. It's really remarkable, especially at his age. But then, you know, you've got a couple other guys that have been doing their job, you know, and when you try to differentiate between what's an acceptable amount of pass protection versus what's an acceptable amount of time to throw the ball, and you've got dueling controversies or dueling opinions here, because very much is this offensive line a patchwork group, and they've struggled at times. There's no question. But on the other hand, like I said, when you get into a clean pocket and you start running around, when you've got guys that haven't even gotten to the top of their route yet, That's an issue. That is a fundamental issue
sure.
that needs put the axe on right away from the coaching staff. Like, look, we're done talking you up, dude. You've been here for 13 weeks, okay? Let's even take week one out. You've been here 13 weeks and practiced. It's time for you to start relaxing and listening to the coaching that we're giving you. And that worries me because there's something else that this kind of makes me wonder what it is. I'm a big fan of Brian Schottenheimer as a quarterback's coach, so I'm going to assume and I'm going to pull bias here and say that it's not him. My other issue is that in past years, Andrew Luck's had that same issue. He's had the same issue. Won't dump it down to the easy guy. Wants to go to the 12-yard route. Has to get away from pressure so often that he starts seeing ghosts and he leaves clean pockets and then he starts running into pressure. These are things that, I mean, maybe it's just from the constant worrisome approach to the offensive line. I can't really explain what that's like to know that you have an offensive line that you can't trust. But when they do pull through and do their job, man, it just seems like there are so many times that they're not getting what's
not getting help yet.
Does
Brissett have a future there in Indy as a backup, as a number two, as a, you know, did you like that trade when they moved, you know, Philip Dorsett for him? Do you think, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't generally give up on his players. Did you like that move? And does he have a number two future there?
Not initially. I didn't like the trade. I took some time to warm up to it. It turned out to be a really, in my opinion, it turned out to be a really good trade. The only thing that was saving me from keeping that, to say, you know, this is a good trade, is that the Colts were really shy on weapons at the time. And even though Dorsett hadn't been really producing a whole lot, he was a speedster. And in my opinion, he's got really good hands. He's just not given credit for it. And he is a guy that could be a weapon. And the Colts didn't have any that were healthy at that time. I mean, they had lost out on a bunch of guys at that time coming in and out of injury reports and stuff like that. So to me, it seemed risky, but obviously the Colts knew that they had some guys coming back that we didn't know about yet at that time. And so, like I said, initially I didn't like it because I felt like the Colts were giving up weapons for somebody that I didn't really feel was going to help them. I was not a fan of Brissett until I started breaking him down. I'm still not. I guess you wouldn't say, I mean, I'm a fan of him. I'm a fan of his potential. I'm not a fan of how long he's taking to make simple progressions as a NFL quarterback. That, to me, is aggravating as can be. But I am a fan of the trade now, especially when you look at the Colts. I mean, Scott Tolzien couldn't last another pass with that dude under there, you know, and that's one of the things that kind of
So you do not even want to see him down the stretch here at all?
Never. No. Okay. Nope. Nope, don't even care. I mean, I really don't care who they put in. Scott Tolzien should not even be on this roster right now. He really shouldn't.
Happened to Brissett, it's just completely not worth watching.
Yep, they should have gotten a scrub quarterback off the heap, and they should have sent Tolzien packing immediately after that because he has no future. But Brissett, I think, has a number two future. I don't think he's a starting quarterback. I think the talking heads like to assume that he is or could be immediately or very soon. I don't think that's the case. I think that he's a good backup now, but I think he could be a great backup in another year or so. And so if you – maybe he'll get some offers from some teams. Colts should probably try to hang on to him in case that he – you know, because the league gets desperate a lot. You know, for a quarterback.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to have a team might come call and give you a draft pick at some point, especially if Luck's healthy, you'd go a different direction at number two. You could actually, you know, hedge your bet and get a little bit of return on him, I would think. I mean, there's plenty of people that are similar to Tyrod Taylor that are very interested in Tyrod, and the Bills probably will do the same after they draft their guy. You know, we signed TJ Yates earlier in the season and had a guy like Peterman. We were all praying for him to beat out Yates, and he did. And then we sent Yates packing. So that's kind of similar to Tolzien and Brissett. There's a little, you know, poor man's version of Tyrod. So it's really, really cool at the overlaps between the two teams and kind of what they were doing there, especially at least offensively. Same thing in the wide receiving core. We, you know, tried our best to develop a wide receiving core, and you had, you know, Zay Jones, who's looked a lot better now, and he's really coming on, had one of the worst productive first half of the seasons ever for a rookie receiver. He had like 50 targets and caught like 10 of them. And then you had a trade. I mean, Jordan Matthews, who's looked awful. He's been hurt. Deontay Thompson's probably been like their best receiver, and he was off the scrap heap from Chicago. Andre Holmes is okay. Special teamer, Kelvin Benjamin, guy who struggles to get separation, and Tyrod's not going to throw that ball to someone that struggles to get separation, but he's still a big imposing receiver who's still a top, 20 receiver in the NFL. So, it's just interesting overlaps here. You still have McCoy, much like Gore, who's, still just a focal point of this offense and just continues to get it done. So there's just some interesting overlaps to me between the two, at least offensively, that are very interesting. And then they have the direction of the defense here in Buffalo, with a lot of people really like where Sean McDermott's going. Outside of kind of getting gashed in the running game lately, the defensive backs have been just phenomenal, with Trey White as a Defensive Rookie of the Year candidate. And you have Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, who's a Pro Bowler, playing in a safety position, and E.J. Gaines. When we traded Sammy Watkins, we never thought we'd get a cornerback who's played as well as Gaines has played, as well as a second-round pick. So, we're really liking that trade here in Buffalo, getting that second, and E.J. Gaines, who's been a really good complimentary number two cornerback, shut down some bigger receivers, shut down Brandon Cooks last week. We put White on Gronkowski, and then we put Gaines on Brandon Cook. So that actually worked. We got Gronk frustrated, much to his dismay. and that's what led to his foul that he pretty much got battled.
Will White be back this week?
I think so. It is looking strong. He's doing everything he can to play. To be at the stage of the concussion protocol where he's an individual, generally is a good thing. As anyone that follows the concussion protocol, there's like four stages to it, and to be able to practice is already at the third stage. So yeah, it does look likely. It would be the Bills that were just like, we don't want to risk it. But I really think that the Bills are still in the mode of really trying to eke out a potential playoff push, especially with a favorable schedule with Indy and Miami at home, going to Miami, and then, final game against New England. So they're still going to try to make a push and do whatever they can to beat the Colts. And what kind of mode are you in to, kind of wrap up our talk? Are you in a mode where you want to see the Colts go out and win four games? Do you want to see them? Because the Colts still have a favorable schedule to me to be able to win some games. Do you want to see them win some? I mean, Denver you have on the schedule. Do you want to see Houston? Do you want to see them win these games? Do you want to see them get the best draft position possible? Where are you at in the final four games?
I'm at a crossroads, man. I'll be honest with you. I hate the week 9, week 10, regardless of the record, people that are talking draft pick. That drives me nuts as a fan, because I can't live like that, man. That's not how I watch football. At the same token, I'm looking at these last four games. I mean, quite honestly, all four of them are winnable. The Broncos might be the only team in the league worse than the Colts. The Ravens, have been up and down, but could be, dominant and could make the Colts look really crappy. The Texans are a beatable team. They've proven that. But this week, you kind of set the tone. You're in an unfamiliar place. The Buffalo is a notoriously difficult place to play. And I guess if I had to pick best case scenario, the Colts, I would want them to either, if they're going to win, I want them to blow all of them out. Just rock them. And if they don't, blow them out. I kind of want them to split here. And I think that that's more reasonable to think that the Colts could probably get two more wins out of these last four games. Probably the Ravens and the Broncos and the Texans. And that would be okay, I think, because right now the Colts are inside of the top five or at top five for their draft position. And I think that's a really good place to be with what the Colts are trying to get out of a rebuild with Chris Ballard. There's going to be a ton of turnover, man, this offseason in the Colts, and we don't know who's staying, if anybody is staying. And that's all encompassing when you look at, we have draft position. That's going to be an alluring point to a coach. Hopefully, I'm kind of hoping for an offensive minded guy this time around. And you've got so many things that are going to be pieces to this rebuild mode to next year. It's really hard for me to say I want draft position or I want wins. Right now, the most important thing for this team is undoubtedly, I would say, draft position. These wins don't mean anything right now. There's nothing the Colts can do to improve their stock for this season. All it can do, really, is show us some of these younger guys. Now, this is kind of the unintended benefit of a guy like Simon going on IR. Terrell Basham, like I mentioned before, only has like 5 or 6 tackles on the season, has only a couple sacks, hasn't done a whole lot, but he's a guy who needs these extra snaps desperately to build on what he can do to kind of try to build his profile for next season and kind of show this coaching staff what they wait, what I about said wasted, but I didn't mean that, what they dropped a draft pick on him for. And I think that's a good thing to have. And we've got a couple more areas where that's the case. But ultimately, this is going to be one of those 4-week spans where you just think, all right, we're only up 1 right now. They've got the ball. Just make the field goal, Buffalo. You know, just make it.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in that spot before where the Bills are still fighting for the chance to end this drought, and I don't care if they get bounced in the first round as the 6th seed. They're doing everything they can to end the drought and get on to the next stage of football here. But we've been in this stage before where you much like the Colts sitting at 3-8 or, you know, whatever the record may be, and it's just like winning, you know, hitting this field goal at the end of this game, just it's nice, but it really hurts you to be able to be in prime position for a prime target. So it's just such an interesting place, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
really purgatory as a fan.
It really is. And then you do that year after year after year after year, and then you're now rooting to miss, and it can put you in a bad spot. And, you know, kind of lead us into this final, you know, end of this game. What are you seeing happening, you know, with all your attrition, the Bills doing everything they can to potentially stay alive here? You know, kind of what's your score prediction here for up in Buffalo?
Well, the Colts seem to be around the same area in every game that they play. The Colts don't score a ton of points this year. I mean, the most that they've scored, if I'm not mistaken, is 31 against the Browns. So, I mean, they're much more of a 20-point team. I think that the Colts have such a issue right now at a couple positions that are going to elicit points for the Bills. Peterman is the guy that makes this prediction different, you know, for me. He's still young. He's still a guy that they've got that they're trying to produce, you know, some quality play out of. If he plays, I think this could be a 21-20 game. If the Colts end up facing Tyrod Taylor, I mean, it could be ugly. I mean, I think that he's the kind of quarterback that the Colts struggle against most often. A guy who can get out of the pocket.
How'd they do against, like, Russell Wilson?
Yep, a guy who can get out of the pocket, but he definitely doesn't need to be out of the pocket to hurt him. And that's a guy who beats the Colts, and he beats them by 2 touchdowns. You know, and that's where I'm kind of leaning. I mean, I would almost say 33-20 Bills. And if I'm probably being more realistic by saying, you know, maybe even 30-17, because I don't know if the Colts can put up that many points. They're just not a team that's proven it. They have a guy like Mack who could drop a touchdown at any point in time. Brissett could have one of his long touchdown passes, but he could just as easily, you know, repeat the next drive with a pick six. You know, I mean, so it's really hard to say. I think that the Colts are in a position to probably get a couple touchdowns, and I don't think that there's going to be much more from them other than a Vinny field goal. So I'll even say 30-17.
That's fair, and I agree with you on Tyrod. If not, if Peterman plays, it'll be an interesting game for the Colts to see, you know, kind of what they do. I don't really have to do anything, honestly. Don't come after him. He's just going to sit back there and throw the ball after 2 seconds, and who knows what could happen with that thing. That's how he's proven to play. We'll see if he's corrected that. And, you know, really, we really are very appreciative for you to come on this show. At Lockdown Bills and kind of give your insight. It's always great. I mean, we don't play the Colts too much anymore. You're talking every 2 to 3 years, depending on how the teams finish in the standings. I don't know if they'll get another game next year. I'm trying to think if they – I do think they will play the AFC South next year. So they will get another game, and I believe that would be in Indianapolis. So maybe I'll make it down your way. So
that'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely. And we really appreciate you coming on this show, taking a minute out on anyone. And tell us where our followers can find you this week and kind of get, you know, get used to you and kind of, you know, get some more takes as the week rolls along.
Now, you guys can catch my work at StampedeBlue.com. It's the SB Nation site for the Colts. You can catch me on Twitter at MDainley_NFL. And, you know, that's just about it. I mean, if I'm on, those are the two places I'm on. I have a Stampede Blue ColtsCast. So, I mean, if you guys want to catch some of our conversations to get to our fan base or something, if you guys wanted to check that out. But other than that, that's my home, man. That's where I live. So that's the big deal. And Kevin, I appreciate you having me on, man. This was a good time.
Absolutely. And thanks for everyone tuning in. One last shout out to Pro Football Focus as a premier partner of Locked On Bills and the Locked On. Leave a review for Locked On Bills and leave your Twitter handle for a chance to win a PFF Edge membership. And get those are great to kind of, you know, talk about the stats that we talked about today. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll look out for our next podcast coming up this week.